Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hey folks, this is the Pro Wrestling Roundtable with the twist. This is, or will be, a special Patreon connected podcast. We have been doing small little podcasts and other material on the Patreon account, which you can access and you can listen to and enjoy by just these lowest $5 a month. So anyway, and you can do so and support us in our continued efforts to entertain you and talk about wrestling and talk about the past of wrestling, the future of wrestling, and the current day of wrestling, and whatever the heck else wants to talk about. And we're going to talk about the career of Fritz Von Erich and a first part career retrospective in remembrance of the Von Erich family. And it all started with Fritz. So that is what we're going to do.
Previously on Podcasserole.
Glomer is one of the most underrated cartoon characters of all time.
Some call Glomer the Jar Jar of the PBU, you know. I haven't stepped foot inside of a Subway since, really.
And neither is Jared.
It's true.
You're over at my home every week. Is there a meth lab here?
Not a big one.
I choose him, the one called Kirk. I'm freaking James D. Kirk.
Find out more about Podcasserole now on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Google Play. And don't forget AdamandJP.com and the ESO Network.
And now I'm going to be joined by, as always, my right hand and left hand and probably my right foot, Richard Yule.
Hey.
That was your cue, Richard.
Hi. I said hi.
Well, it was a little late.
I know. I'm a little late tonight. Yeah, it's good to be here. Jonathan is missing in action this week, but we decided to pop on here and do an episode and give the people a little something something.
A little something something. And we did do a poll, or Richard put up a poll on the Facebook page of the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, which everybody should go and join and become a member of because we have lots of neat stuff over there. But he put up a poll a while back, and one of the, I mean, I think it was the biggest thing that people voted on that they would like us to do more of is talk about the past of wrestling, and so that has prompted us to do this. And certainly this is the area that I am most knowledgeable about in the North Texas. Fritz Von Erich, world-class, big-time wrestling stuff, since that's what I grew up with. But so there you go.
You certainly have the most knowledge about it out of the three of us, certainly.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it'd be cool to hear it, and you were in the melting pot when it all happened.
I was. I did. I was right there at ground zero when it all happened right in my teenage years, so it was the perfect storm for me. I mean, I was a fan of wrestling and Fritz before the whole world class Freebird Von Erich war began, and then Fritz was my favorite wrestler growing up. So I mean, I had the benefit of that, plus being at the right age, the right time, whenever that happened, and then unfortunately was there to see it all crumble and fall away a few years later. So I wasn't there for the very beginning. I mean, because it happened right around the time when I was born, but it's when Fritz took over the Dallas office or Texas office. Which actually really it wasn't a Texas office. He created the Texas office because that area had originally been run by another territory. Oh, mistaken. It was, oh man, I can't remember. Anyway, one of the offices to the east, or the southeast, were in control of the Texas area, and they would put shows on there and so on and so forth. But they didn't actually have television or anything else. And then Fritz, who was born in Dallas, decided that they needed to have their own territory and their own television and all this, that, and the other. And so he was already in with Sam Mushnick, who was his booker and boss for years there in St. Louis. And with his backing and going to the NWA, they approved it. And that was the creation of Big Time Wrestling in Dallas, Texas. So.
Yeah, so I don't know if we want to dive right into it or wait a minute, and we'll discuss some other things going on right
now. Let's see what news we need to cover. We haven't really talked about a lot of news lately, and there's been a couple things happening. I do know that there was a couple things I was going to talk about a while back, but I know I've completely forgotten those now. But we got, I guess the big news for me right now, sticking to podcasts, is the age-old war between Vince Russo and Jim Cornette, which had sort of had a, I wouldn't say a ceasefire, but maybe more of a detente, has fired back up from the result of Jim Cornette and Eric Bischoff and Michael Hayes' episode of the Dinner for Three, where Russo's name came up more than once and was pretty much denigrated by both Bischoff and Cornette, and to a lesser degree Michael Hayes, but Michael definitely took shots too. And that prompted Vince Russo to respond on his podcast, The Brand, which prompted a huge rant and rave by Jim Cornette on his Jim Cornette Experience, which he basically outright called Vince out. He told Vince, because Vince has in the past said that he would like to meet with Jim on their podcast, either one of their podcasts or a neutral podcast. I think he suggested like Kenny Boland's podcast, the Boland Alley, or whatever, and maybe make it for charity or whatever. But you know, Jim has repeatedly stated he wants no part of that, but he was willing to meet Vince Russo in private without any cameras, without any police, without any guns, without any knives. And he would bring $5,000 in it. Vince Russo could take it away from him, he could have it. So, and then Vince responded to that with basically a comedy bit where he was apologizing to Jim Cornette and basically running down Cornette and Cornette's career and how he's jealous of Vince and all this other, blah, blah, blah. And just today, Jim responded with his own apology to Vince and basically doing the same thing and only better. But then at the very end, very menacingly, again, made it clear that he had something, a present, for Vince Russo, and that if he ever gets the opportunity, he would love to give it to him. So,
yeah, I can't imagine that either. I mean, I don't have very good things to say, not necessarily to say, but I just think Russo is a bit overrated, which that might be causing a Twitter war of my own, but
well, he does have his supporters.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I've actually met him in real life, and he's exactly what you would think he is if you met him in real life. But anyway, and Cornette, I just think Cornette has the viability to act the way he wants in a way. Like, he is a true mind of the business, and I just have never felt that Russo was.
Well, more than that, Jim, and this is one of the things that I loved about his routine, which he basically did a flip version of what Vince did, but it made it more than clear that Jim Cornette has zero reason to feel jealous of Vince Russo in any way whatsoever, because he basically runs down what, you know, Jim has done in this business and what he has sacrificed in this business. I mean, Jim has, you know, gotten injured in this business. He's blood, sweat, and tears. He's traveled the roads. He's helped more people in this business than anybody. He's responsible for lots of careers. John Cena's career, you know, Jim Cornette's a large part of, from OVW. You know, Randy Orton, so many others. You know, Al Snow, we said he wouldn't have been nothing if it had been for Jim taking a chance on him and Smoky Mountain. So Kane said the same thing. So Jim Cornette is an instrumental piece of part of wrestling history since the early 80s, mid to early 80s. Russo had the happenstance to be a part of the big boom of the Attitude Era in New York for 2 years, but he has not had any success since then.
I mean, and honestly, when Russo went to WCW, I kind of liked some of the things that he was doing. I mean, in front of the camera.
No, it wasn't all terrible.
No, it wasn't all terrible. I mean, in front of the camera, I thought he was way better in front of the camera than behind. Yeah. Like, he can play a heel.
Oh, sure.
He can make you hate him in 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
So if somebody was writing for him, I think it would be much better.
No, he's a fine as far as that's concerned. It's like, Eric is great in front of the camera. Eric's really good. But Eric Bischoff, I mean, for those who may not pick up on that. No, but here's the deal. And here's the truth. And I've said this a bit of times. I was just as big a fan of the Attitude Era as anybody else. I was watching both shows. I was eating it up and so on and so forth. But here's the truth of the matter is, there's no denying what the Attitude Era did for pro wrestling and what it did particularly for WWE. And it saved the company very possibly. It certainly, you know, got them to be the number one again. And it, of course, brought us The Rock and it brought us, you know, Stone Cold and it brought us, you know, all this great stuff, so on and so forth. But here's the truth. It also brought a lot of crap.
A lot.
There was a lot of crap in the Attitude Era. And dare I say it, maybe that a lot of that, I ain't going to say all of it, a lot of that could be laid at the feet of a certain individual as well.
I'm just going to say this because I'm fascinated by certain points in wrestling, but a woman gave birth to a hand.
Yeah, exactly.
An elderly woman gave
now,
birth
now, admittedly, to a hand. Now, Vince has stated that he was gone by then, though.
Well, I'm just saying the attitude, know, when you brought up the
but
attitude.
But he brought it, he either, you could even say that he created the environment where somebody else did that, you know, or to me, it's like, I mean, I the one guy I interviewed him that he said that, the guy works for the British outfit over there, he, I would have followed up with, yeah, but did you write the idea before you left?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly didn't feel out of place for the things that they were doing. I mean, it certainly just fell right into all the other stuff that they were doing. So, I certainly think he steered the environment into that way.
Yeah.
But you know, that's neither here nor there. That could be a whole other podcast about the Attitude Era and WCW at the same time.
Yeah. Well, another wrinkle that's been added to this is that also last week, and I guess it's just one of those things how viral stuff works, you know, how you'll have seen something 2 years ago on Facebook, and then all of a sudden it becomes everybody sharing it again 2 years later, like they had never seen it before, which they probably didn't, but you did. Something like that's happened with Chuck Taylor's Invisible Hand Grenade in PWG that he did a couple of years ago, which he's done it before. He did it at Chikara.
I have no idea what that is.
And basically, it's literally what it explains. Chuck Taylor, during a match, will produce an invisible hand grenade, and he will pull the pin, and he lets it go, and everybody sells So, anyway, a lot of people send this thing to Jim Cornette. You know why they're sending it. Because they want to get a reaction out of it. And they know they're going to get a rant from him. So that's exactly what he did. And he ranted about that. And he ranted about PWG and all that kind of bullshit and so on and so forth. And apparently that got up Dave Meltzer's nose a little bit. And he responded to that on the Wrestling Observer show with Brian Alvarez. And so, you know, Jim's actually friends with Dave and respects him. And they've been, you know, he's been friends with Dave back when Jim was still a fan, when he wasn't even, in the wrestling business. Matter of fact, folks, Jim Cornette actually created the five-star system even before Dave used it. So there you go. But anyway.
I think Jim, you know, on the other spectrum of, you know, it might have sounded like I was defending Jim in the beginning. Cornette has a tendency to go over on the lighter side of wrestling, you know, the invisible hand grenade, I guess, and much like Joey Ryan and Will Ospreay, and you know, the side of wrestling that is definitely not old school, but just something different to give the fans.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
which I think it should all be there. It should all have a place.
Oh, I don't, and that's the thing. And here's the deal. And Jim said that today because he was responding to Dave, and it's like he was kind of surprised at Dave's reaction to his reaction. And then, you know, apparently Joey Ryan responded, you know, they were talking to him. No, it wasn't. It was Omega. Kenny Omega, the head on there, and they basically had him kind of reply to Jim and his dislike of him. But anyway, the point is that Jim says that he doesn't care if anybody likes it. He doesn't care if anybody wants to spend their money on it. He doesn't care, you know, he doesn't understand it. He doesn't like it, but he isn't telling anybody else they can't like it. He's just telling you he don't like it. And that as far as he's concerned, that isn't real wrestling.
Yeah.
And he's certainly not alone in that regard. He's just the most loud about it.
Can't imagine.
But it's the thing, it's like he's saying, but then Jim was completely unaware that guys like Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and others, and Russo has used this tactic, where they basically claim that Jim does it all for an act, and that he's just doing it because it's his stick, it's his gimmick, it's his, you know, work that, yeah, and then so on and so forth, and la 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 la. And basically, Brian Lass brought that up to Jim today, and Jim was just incredulous. He couldn't believe that anybody didn't know that he's being absolutely serious, and that anybody who really knows him would know that he's absolutely serious. It's just like, you know, this whole thing I told, you know, when he did that threat last week to Vince Russo, I just said, I sure hope Vince takes that seriously. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, because, you know, Jim's been in jail. Jim has had assault charges. Jim doesn't, he ain't kidding. He will beat the shit out of Vince Russo unless Vince Russo is able to stop him. That's just the way it is. You know, and that's just who Jim is. Jim has always been that way. He's very volatile. He's very passionate. He's got a huge temper. But he grew up in an age that was different, and he fought the wars. You know, he was in the Memphis area and so on and so forth, and in the Mid-South area where they had to fend their way through riots. And, as a matter of fact, that brings up, Joey Ryan said the stupidest ass thing, apparently. I didn't see it, and I didn't hear it until Brian Lash brought it up. But apparently there was, like, he tweeted out that his, which one of the Jim's biggest complaints is Ryan's dick spot, you know, where he.
Sure.
Yeah, and apparently Ryan tweeted out that the dick spot is just as realistic as, you know, hitting somebody with a tennis racket. And Jim was like saying, well, you said he could tell all those people who filed charges on me. Because he beat the shit out of him trying to get him to save his life to get away from a crowd, you know. I mean, how in the world does Joey, it's a tennis racket, it's a piece of wood.
Well, and I mean, I'll defend Joey to the extent of, you know, as weird as that spot is, and if you don't know what we're talking about, just, I don't know what you would type in, but it's just where basically, I don't even know how to describe it. He uses his member to, like, basically kind of suplex the other person, or twist them around, toss them around.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's funny. Joey is one of those characters where either you like him or you hate him, and I tend to like him. And I'll give this a brief plug because it relates to our next episode. But he actually has an action figure out now. So as part of the a new line out. So if that, you know.
Well, I certainly hope that he doesn't have the Mattel problem, considering who he is.
And the figure is actually awesome. Like, it looks just like him. It's got the chest hair and kind of the crazy tights he wears and stuff. So it's a very cool figure. But we'll talk way more about it next episode.
Right.
But he's different, and I think that's what. I mean, even as a kid, that's what I loved about wrestling, is there's so much variety, and I think there's even more variety now. I mean, when you talk about Will Ospreay and even Kenny Omega and John Cena and Joey Ryan, and I mean, you could go to anybody, EC3, all those people are different from each other. They all have a different style. They all have a different take on the sport of wrestling, which I will defend that it is a sport. But, you know, I just think that's what is the best about wrestling. So,
well, I guess, I don't completely agree with Jim, obviously, because he's a lot more radical about it than I am in more ways than one. Though I do tend to side with him more often than not, because I tend to be sort of an old school minded individual. But I mean, I love Chikara, and I have no problem with Joey. I've laughed at Joey.
I haven't seen a lot of Chikara, but what I have, I've loved all of it.
Yeah, but then I'm a comedy guy too, so I mean, yes. I enjoy, you know, a good laugh if it's actually good. I guess my issue is where I could see his point, and I definitely agree with him, is that anything can be taken too far. And while, yes, kayfabe has sort of died, it's not entirely dead, and we can bring it back, but things like wrestling a 9-year-old kid isn't the way to do that. Because that definitely is just putting it out there, okay, this is all fake. It's kind of the same way that I'm bothered when wrestlers really present themselves as who they really are on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
If you follow what I mean.
Yes. Yeah, I get it.
Well, I want to see more kayfabe. Definitely not kayfabe.
You know? I get it. You want to see more Matt Hardy.
I do.
When he was broken and when he was in TNA.
Oh, yes.
I mean, nowadays, I don't know if he's as wacky as he was.
I haven't looked at his Twitter
as much, but...
No, actually, no. He's been more preoccupied, him and Reeby, with Anthem and trying to get the damn gimmick back. So,
which that could be a whole nother podcast as well.
Oh, yes.
All right, before we talk too long about all that, because we could talk forever. I just want to mention about Harley Race.
He's
still with us, luckily.
Get well, Harley.
But he apparently had a fall and damaged both of his legs. I think, were they both broken?
It was like a lot of stuff, just the legs. I don't know. Did he fall from a high place or something?
Well, apparently he's had trouble walking anyway. And so this is, apparently he's in good spirits about it. I read an interview with his son, I believe, and says he's just frustrated now because he was starting to get better and walk better and stuff. And now this probably has set him back forever. Oh, yeah. But don't ever count a king out, you know.
They got us tougher nails.
And even though I'm as young as I am, and, I remember there's one memory I have of him. He was King Harley by the time I was around, but him and Hogan had a huge feud, and he went. They set up a table, and he put Hogan on the table, and I tried to find video of this, and I couldn't. But Harley got up on the ring and jumped off to go through the table on Hogan. Hogan moved and Harley went through, but it was a huge deal. Like, now table spots are one in a million, but back then I had never seen it. And I mean, they treated it like
WWE
dead.
Had done it.
I mean, they treated him like he was dead after that. I mean,
he actually legit injured. He got legit injured in that.
From that?
Yes, he did.
So
that's why he disappeared, and why you had the new king with Haku and all that coming up. Because, I think he hurt his spleen something, some kind of eternal injury.
But I don't know if he has a book out, but I would love to read his book.
Oh, Harley should have his stories
I wish I could put a book up to my head and just absorb all the words, because there's so many books out there that I can't read. And I'd love to do a book reading podcast, like a book review podcast, I should say. So if anybody's interested, hit us up on Facebook and let us know.
That's a good idea.
If you want to do it, if we have enough interest in it or you want to hear it, I think we can devote some time to read one and then get a round table up to talk about it.
But you're absolutely right about him needing to do a book, because Harley was the guy that all the other wrestlers would sit around and listen to and learn at the learning tree, just hearing his stories and hearing his statements and so on and so forth, because, you know, everybody respected Harley, everybody, young, old, old-timers, new-timers, everybody respected Harley Race. And so there you go. Skip better, Harley.
It does look like he has one, too. It's called King of the Ring.
Oh.
The Harley Race story is put out in 2006 by Harley Race and Gary Tritz. So you can go to... It looks like paperback's very expensive, but the hardcover is not. So I don't know what's happening there. But you can go to the ESO Amazon store and order it through there and help us out that way, too.
I just wish somebody would finally talk that one guy into allowing a reprint of the Gary Hart book, because apparently it's one of the best ever written, because that guy had just a brilliant mind for the business. But yes, get well, Harley. Get well, Harley. But yes, you're right about that chair spot. That table spot was completely unheard of in WWF.
I was young. I think I was probably like 7 when it happened, maybe. But that honestly what's made me a Harley fan. That spot. And he was just so great, you know. I think a good wrestler, heel or babyface, can make you like him, and especially a kid liking a heel, you know, that's probably a rare occurrence.
Harley was definitely that type of heel, and the fact that there was never any question that he was tough. There was never any question that he was the King of Wrestling, because that was a nickname he actually had, you know, sort of. That was really more of a backstage one, but, you know, I think they definitely used in St. Louis to some degree. But that's why they went with the King thing with him, you know. But he was a guy that was presented as, you know, he was the world champion, and he may be a no count, you know, bad guy, but, you know, he wasn't a coward, and he wasn't weak, and he wasn't unskilled, and he wasn't not tough. And so that's definitely the type of character that he was and always presented as.
Yeah. All right. Well,
speaking of that, that was also the persona of one Fritz Von Erich, the many, many years that he worked as a heel all across, America and in Japan. The one and only Fritz Von Erich.
Yeah, and that's who I want to talk about. This is a kind of a Patreon episode, for the simple fact that we're promoting it a lot. And if you want to hear more Von Erich stuff after this, it will be on the Patreon cast. So we're only covering Fritz tonight. Do a little bit of a discussion on him, but then we'll go much more in depth on kind of the life and the downfall and such of the entire family.
Yes.
So the Patreon cast is sort of like, it's much more looser than the regular show. So if you just like hearing me and John and Jonathan and Jerry Chandler and other people talk, then, you know, you can support us. We try to do as many things as we can over there. Once we get more support, that makes it easier to do. For as little as $5 a month, you can get access to the podcasts that we do, and I think we're doing about 3 a month or so. That's the goal. And then I try to do some special articles here and there. There's some other special things. We've got some original art trading cards by Brian Silverbacks that you can win in a drawing, and if you're the only Patreon user, then all you have to do is be there and you get it. So yeah, we'll
Couldn't be simpler.
I know. I mean, right? So June, you know, if you become a Patreon member now, that puts you in the running for June's drawing. And so however many Patreon users there is, that's your chances. So just keep that in mind. And because they're cool cards, we've got Ultimate Warrior, Bray Wyatt, Kevin Owen, and Jake the Snake Roberts. And the Bray Wyatt is amazing.
Yes, it is.
It is very, very cool. And I wasn't going to give everybody the choice, but if you do it this month, you can pick whichever one you want. We've got, if you go over there, the Patreon account is patreon.com/theprowrestlingroundtable. If you go over there, you can see the pictures of the cards, so you can see how cool they are and not just take my opinion for it.
There's a fair chance you don't like the news, and I get that. I'm Buzz Burbank, and I do a different kind of newscast I think you will like. I tell stories, true stories, because when you view it the right way, there's nothing more amazing than real life. I cover most of the stuff the big media outlets cover, but often with a different approach, richer in detail, and with a perspective that ties it all together so we have some idea of what it all means. I deliver stories that'll make you laugh, make you cry, and make you angry, because that is the nature of life, and because you cannot be a better citizen unless you understand and feel the news. I also don't cover some of the useless stories you'll find elsewhere, and do cover real stories the rest of the media somehow managed to avoid. With my nearly 40 years' experience in broadcast journalism and a love of writing, this is a news program that's custom-made for you. Buzz Burbank News and Comment is now a weekly show, new each Thursday, and available free on iTunes, SoundCloud, and several other platforms, and at buzzburbank.com. In addition to the other shows you enjoy here on the ESO Broadcast Network, thank you for adding me to your playlist as well.
So with that all being said and that promo being out there, we're going to talk to John because he has the most information about the Von Erichs. He was born and raised in Texas, and that's Von Erich country, undoubtedly the biggest family in Texas, right? John.
Oh, yeah, easy.
And so tell, like, I know very little about the Von Erichs, especially Fritz. So was Fritz, and, you know, this is coming from, I'm barely 40 now, and so I really have little to no information about them, because that's what you're here for. So was Fritz a wrestler? Was he just in the game, or what was a little bit of Fritz's background?
Oh, no, Fritz was definitely a wrestler, and not only a wrestler, but one of the top wrestlers of the 50s and 60s. He started out, his real name was Jack Atkinson, and he was born in Jewett, Texas, small little town south, it's sort of the mid part of Texas, down below Dallas. And he attended Southern Methodist University, SMU, which is there in Dallas. And he was actually signed by the Dallas Texans, which was the original NFL Dallas franchise that didn't survive.
Way before
the Cowboys, and it was around for a year or two. And but he got cut, and then he went up to Canada to try the Canadian Football League. And while he was in Canada, he met a fellow named Stu Hart.
Who's that? No.
Yes, the legendary Stu Hart. And Stu convinced him to become a wrestler because Fritz was 6'3" and, you know, 260 pounds. Big, big man. So he saw money in him, and he said, hey, I'll train you and I'll book you in my Klondike wrestling promotion, which is long before Stampede. It was his original wrestling promotion there. And he trained him, and he turned him into a German heel named Fritz Von Erich, and he teamed him up with his brother Waldo Von Erich, another wrestler that he was training and had, whose original name was Walter Seiber, who was actually Canadian. And they became a hugely over and unpopular, a very hated tag team. I mean, keep in mind, this was 1953, you know, in the 50s. So World War II was, you know, just a couple of years ago, you know, and the Germans still were, you know, very, you know, people had a lot of bad memories about the Germans, and they definitely did the whole goose stepping and the whole works. And then they were and they wrestled there, and they wrestled several places as a top tag team in across the United States and Canada as, the evil Von Erich brothers. They eventually split up when Jack Atkinson's, or Fritz's son, his oldest son, Jack Sr., was electrocuted in Niagara Falls, New York. Just a freak accident.
Oh.
And he was a little boy, and that devastated Jack, and while he continued wrestling and traveling, he just didn't want to stay in that area anymore. And so he and Waldo separated. Waldo went on to wrestle in the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, which eventually would become the WWE. And Fritz went on to other areas, including his mainstay area, which was Sam Mushnick's NWA St. Louis, Missouri area. And he was a huge heel there. There's a lot of... it's funny because there's more footage of Fritz wrestling there than there is of his earlier Texas stuff because of the television show, the famous, Wrestling at the Chase television show, which is there in Chicago, that they came out of St. Louis, and it was a big show on actual network television back in the early days in the 50s, in the early 60s. And so there's actually some saved footage of that. Whereas, unfortunately, there's a lot of the big-time wrestling stuff in North Texas was lost because that stuff just wasn't saved as much. And thankfully, later, they got better with the world class began in 1981 or 82. So anyway, Fritz also became a huge star in Japan, which he was instrumental in the rebuilding of Japanese wrestling after Riki Dozan was stabbed to death. And when Atoni Onaki and Giant Baba were trying to keep Japanese wrestling alive, they brought over several American stars, not the least of which was Fritz Von Erich. And both of them had huge feuds with him. And he became known as Tetsu Nantsume, which is in Japanese the Iron Claw. Because that was Fritz's finishing move was the Iron Claw. And
the Von Erich family trait, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, and it was just a perfect move for Fritz because he had these huge hands. They could just wrap around these foreheads. And there's a very famous image that was utilized on many different wrestling stuff and magazines and whatever of him squeezing the head of Antonio Inoki and blood just spurting all around the fingers of Fritz. And so it's a very famous image. But, so Fritz was a huge heel. I mean, certainly somewhere between... you know, his start in 1953 and when he took over Dallas in 66. He certainly a large portion of that time, he was one of, if not the top heel in all of American wrestling, and certainly was in Japanese wrestling. He was just one of those kind of guys that just he traveled. He had certain places he worked a while, but he was also kind of like Andre and some others, a Booger Bruiser Brody later, a sort of a special event type of guy that would come in and be this big bad guy for the local hero to triumph over or whatever. So he was just a huge, huge heel.
So was he ever a babyface, or was he mainly a heel in this life?
He was completely a heel all the way up until he come back to Texas.
And there are pictures of the internet of the man's hands, and my gosh, they are ginormous.
Huge.
Ginormous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that picture I was talking about, you know, I don't know what it was, but Antonio Inoki's head was big. And for that matter, so was John Bava's head. His is big, and his hands just fit right across that forehead. So
yeah,
big hands. But Fritz, like I said, had been working mostly as sort of a home base in St. Louis with the legendary Sam Muchnick, the promoter. And he decided that he would like to run a territory in Texas, and so they went to the NWA, and then they got it situated, and he decided to open up a wrestling office in Dallas, Texas, and worked with Ed McLemore, who was the owner of the Dallas Floratorium, and took over he basically became the guy in charge of Texas wrestling and working with Paul Bosch down in Houston, who ran the Houston. He just ran Houston. Paul Bosch did. And then McLemore died in 69, and basically Fritz took everything over. He actually then owned the sportatorium and everything. And at first, he brought Waldo in, and they continued their thing. But then pretty quickly, in late 1966, I mean, again, he took over. He started Big Time Wrestling, which is what it was called then. Big Time Wrestling started in 1966. And I'm not quite sure when in 66 he started it. But later in 66, he turned babyface and began feuding with Gary Hart, Playboy Gary Hart, and his stable of wrestlers, which at that time included Carl Von Bronner, Al Costello, and the Masked Spoilers. And that feud really never ended. That was the feud for Fritz, and then even later the other Von Erichs. Hart feuded with them for two decades, you know. So, I mean, that was the standby. Other heel wrestlers would come under his, you know, tutelage or his managerial, you know, purview, but it was always Hart trying to destroy Fritz and the Von Erichs. Fritz's other classic rivalries during the early period were Johnny Valentine, Stan Stasiak, Professor Toru Tanaka, Lord Alfred Hayes, the Sheik, Bruiser Brody, and the Great Kabuki later on.
Who'd you say, Stan Stasiak?
Yes, yeah, Stan Stasiak.
Is that related to the other Stasiak we know?
Sean Stasiak,
yeah.
That's his dad, yes.
Okay, I got you. Yeah. Cool. I didn't know he was the second generation.
Oh, yeah. Stan Stasiak was a big deal in the 60s. He had a move called the Heart Punch, which was basically just punching your chest, and people would sell it like you knocked them out, you know. And it was like really sold as being this really dangerous move and so on and so forth. Actually, Stan Stasiak was a very short-lived WWE champion.
Wow, really?
Yep. Johnny Valentine, of course, he was just one of the great heels of his day. I remember those very, very fervently, the battles between Fritz and Johnny Valentine. Johnny was a big guy, and just, he was just methodical. And he just had the ability to make people hate him like nobody else. He had it all. I remember him feuding with Ox Baker back in the day. And of course, most people may know Ox Baker as the guy that Snake Plissken kills in the ring in Escape from New York.
Ah.
But also, Fritz had other baby faces there that were Willie Over, Wahoo McDaniel, Pepper Gomez, Red Bastine, Jose Lothario, and so on and so forth. And business was great, and it was good, but then, of course, he was getting older. And so in 1982, he decided to have a retirement match, which was at Texas Stadium in Irving, for the NWA American title, which King Kong Bundy was the holder of at the time. And Fritz managed to defeat King Kong Bundy and become the American champion for the last time, and then upheld the belt. And that then began the advent of world-class championship wrestling.
Ah.
With the boys becoming the main stars. And
So at that time, was that his true retirement? Did he ever wrestle again?
He came back on a couple of occasions. Most famously, at the first David Von Erich Memorial match, again at Texas Stadium, where he was in a six-man Bad Street match for the six-man championship, him and Mike Von Erich and Kevin Von Erich against the Freebirds, Michael Terry and Buddy. It's a very famous match. It's definitely the second most famous match of that card. Famous, most famous being Kerry winning the NWA title from Flair.
So when he retired, his kids were already grown and wrestling at that point.
Yeah, Kevin and David and Kerry had already been wrestling for a few years by then. Yeah.
Okay. And were they, I mean, we'll get into them in the next one, but I guess I want to, you know, like even though Fritz was a heel, I mean, even before the kids came along, was he beloved in the state of Texas? Like, was it like a proud thing that he was from Texas? Like, did Texans love him?
Well, okay, that's an interesting way of saying it. Fritz never gave up the kayfabe fact that he was German. He was Fritz Von Erich. He never stopped being Fritz Von Erich. That's why the boys took on the name Von Erich instead of using the family name Atkinson, even though everybody knew they grew up in Denton. But he kept the kayfabe, just like they all did back then, and he was Fritz Von Erich. He was that former German heel. Because, I mean, he did start in Texas doing that. So, but when he turned babyface, he remained babyface, and the babyface. I mean, he was the top babyface of all of North Texas and all of Texas for two decades.
Oh,
and there's
wow.
There's nobody that has that kind of record this side of, you know, Bruno Sammartino and I guess now John Cena, you know.
True.
He was the top guy. I mean, and he was
Hogan probably was face for,
I don't know if he was that
15
long.
Years maybe.
Almost. Jerry Lawler. Okay, there you go. Jerry's got actually beat Fritz. So there you go.
So did people in Texas know that? They knew he was from Texas, but he just went along.
No,
with
keep in mind, kayfabe was very strong back then, and a lot of people didn't have the internet. Yeah. And a lot of people didn't know he come from Texas. No.
That's interesting.
Now they knew he lived in Texas now, and that his boys or some of his boys were born in Texas.
Yeah,
but no, they didn't. They didn't know he for sure was born in Texas.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So now, as far as they're concerned, he was this German who came over and was a bad guy and then turned good guy. And Fritz was really I've used it as an example before when I explained how the Steve Austin thing works and how other heels like that work. He was one of the original, I was a badass heel. I'm a mean sucker. You all hated me. And now I'm fighting against these bad guys, and I'm going to whip their ass. And the fans, of course, just loved it. You know.
Mm.
Well, now you're in trouble because I've seen this guy, and he's messed up such and such, and he's got that iron claw, and he's mean, and he ain't gonna follow no rules, and he's gonna just tear you up. So Fritz Von Erich became, I mean, when you say Von Erich country, it began with Fritz Von Erich. There's no question that the boys became just as popular in their own way, particularly Kerry. But Fritz was huge. He was just the biggest thing in Texas this side of Tom Landry. You know, there's just no getting around it. He was just you know, everybody loved him. I mean, every demographic of fan loved him. I mean, me and my brother named our dog after him, and there's no greater honor.
That is a great honor, right?
He was a German Shepherd, so we thought, perfect.
That's excellent, actually.
That's right. Fritz. Here's our dog, Fritz. But, yeah, so, I mean, he was just that type of bigger than life because he was huge. He was tough. He was mean. That's why I kind of was leading to this, because he was a totally tough type of face guy. He wasn't, you know, a Hulk Hogan type baby face. He wasn't he was a tough guy. He was a no nonsense tough guy who was, you know, rough in the ring. So, and he fought villain after villain after villain after villain. And until finally he decided to hang it up in 1982 and let his kids take over. So, but, I mean, I say kids take over in the leading role. Fritz was still running the territory. He was still the boss. He was still running the territory in his office there at the Sportatorium, along with originally with Gary Hart as the booker, and then later Kim Mantell, and then Gary Hart come back, and so. And Michael Hayes did a lot of booking during the Freebird Von Erich stuff.
So when did he get out of? I guess I say this not knowing the answer, but when did he get out of the wrestling game?
He sold it to 1989 and 1990, after Super Clash 3, which is another thing we could do a whole podcast about. That was, if you're not aware of it, that's when World Class and Memphis and WA and Crockett and all the other territories decided to do a pay-per-view together to try to fight against the WWF.
It was,
in some ways it was great, in some ways it wasn't. It was a boondoggle. It didn't work, but there was a lot of good stuff that happened on it. But,
I mean, yeah, that'd be cool to see, though.
I bet
some of it was a mess, probably, just because it was, there was a lot of these you had all these wrestling federations trying to better one-up each other, probably.
Sadly, I think the biggest mark against it was that the main event was definitely a mess, because it was a unification title match between Jerry Lawler and Kerry Von Erich, and Kerry was high, and he ended up blading himself too early and deep, and he was bleeding like a stuck pig on his arm, and so they ended up having to call the match. And it didn't turn out very well. But there was lots of other great stuff on the card, and even that match is still fascinating to watch. But anyway, nevertheless. So, yeah, Kim Mantell, who was co-owners with Fritz at that point of the WCCW, sold it to Jerry Jarrett, which then Kevin Von Erich sued Jarrett to try to keep a hold of it. It didn't work. So then Jarrett took over the area and created the USWA, which combined Memphis and Dallas, and so then traded off to, brought in some of the Memphis people and basically had two different areas, and then they actually created a feud between the two and so on and so forth. But, yeah, pretty much Fritz was out of it by 1990.
So just in doing a little bit of research that I've done, I see that, you know, by this time, maybe not 90, but I mean, we'll go into this much, much more in the future, but, I mean, tragedy just surrounds the Von Erich family.
Yes.
You've already mentioned the Jack Atkinson thing, Jr., yes. Which was labeled a household accident, I guess.
Yeah.
And so that was the first one, and then just followed by many more. But he, and including himself, which he passed away at an early age, I believe he was 67?
68, yes. 68. And he died, it was 7 years after he sold WCCW.
So 1997.
97, yeah. He divorced his wife of 42 years, Doris, in 1992, 2 years after that. So, yeah, and there was some, you know, and there's
and
been...
And he died of lung cancer, but it not only lung cancer, but it apparently spread to his brain, so probably really nasty way
Not a good way to go, no. And it's a shame, because, I mean, this death did cause a bit of a stir and so on and so forth, and there was definitely a lot out for him. If he had died before all this other tragedy hit, he would have had a state funeral. I mean, he would have had... Dallas would have went crazy at his death. It's like they did with David when David died in 1984 is when David died, and it was a big deal.
It was a big deal. So you think the tragedies that happened in the night, really mostly in the 90s.
Yeah, well, you know, that's where you really truly, and that's the reason why I guess maybe in a way it's a big deal with me. It truly, truly is the power of kayfabe. And the more that these tragedies happen and the more the suicides and the drugs and all the more truth of it all came out, the Von Erichs just lost the luster. They just lost that incredible over-the-top idolization that they had before. The fact that they're still idolized to the point that they are is just a testament to how big it was at one time. I mean, it's hard for me to even describe how big it was. It was huge. I mean, they were... Moreover, than just think of any wrestler that you've ever known in any particular place, and they were more over than that. They were just that over. I mean, at one point, the Von Erich boys were doing a signing or show or something at the Six Flags over Texas, and they had to shut it down. They had to shut it down.
Wow.
The crowds and everything was just too uncontrollable.
I mean, I guess it's because he was rooted so much in Texas. Most wrestlers weren't rooted in a particular area. I guess you could say Jerry Lawler in Memphis, and maybe some other guys in Memphis, because that was a huge boom as well. I wish I had more knowledge on that. But really, those are the only two places I can think of that just had that, you know, that kind of following. But yeah, I could imagine, because I mean, for the most part of 40 years or so, right? I mean,
He took over. He started big time in '66, and he left in '90. So, as far as being having any connection to it whatsoever, yeah.
So when they did this Six Flags thing, was Fritz a babyface?
Yeah, Fritz was a baby since 1966. The boys were adults and already started wrestling by then. That would be the early to mid 80s when they did that. Actually, early 80s, because it was when David was still alive. So.
And since, I mean, like I said, we'll go into more detail next time, but were the boys mostly baby faces for their career?
The boys were always baby faces. There was like once or twice back on a... one-time basis that Kevin and Carrie teamed up as doing sort of a bit of heel work, only because they were wrestling in another territory where they were going over a team that was more over there. And that was in some kind of cross-promotional tag team tournament or something. I think it was Memphis, as a matter of fact. But David actually worked as a heel in Florida, teaming with Dory Funk Jr. and feuding with... Dusty Rhodes, but that was basically on the job training to become NWA World Heavyweight Champion, which you have to know how to be a heel to do that. So,
we covered Fritz a lot. Is there anything else you'd like to mention about him?
Well, you know, just that, you know, there's a lot of talk about and speculation and a lot of crosstalk about Fritz and the way that he raised his boys and the way that he ran things. Like any promoter, he's got people that loved him and people that hated him. People that had a problem with the way he did things and some others, you know, and others, they were completely loyal to him and he was, you know, good to them. As a matter of fact, who was it? Oh, man, I wish I could remember. But there's a wrestler, a famous wrestler, who had a tragedy, I think, had a house burned down or something. So anyway, he was in real dire straits, and Fritz, you know, gave him the money to be able to take care of his problem without being asked. He just gave it to him. And then years later, the guy paid it back. So,
without being asked to.
Oh, no, it was just he was happened to be there, and he just come up to Fritz and said, hey, and handed it to him. So, and I mean, I wish I could remember who that was. But anyway, just like in any case, he was human, and there's good and there's bad. The boys themselves, you know, he was a hard father. He was a attacher. Some of them, you know, have definitely declared they weren't necessarily, wrestling wasn't their first choice. But he definitely wanted them to become wrestlers, and you can see, easy to see why. He saw the money, you know, and he knew. I mean, one thing you can say, because Fritz knew before anybody what those boys would be, you know, how big and over they would be. Because really, you know, they changed the business in more ways than one. It's always talked about how World Class changed things, and they did in a lot of ways with music and the way they filmed things and the camera work and so on and so forth. But one of the biggest things that they did, and only Tommy Rich sort of predates them in this, is they created the sort of pretty boy, athletic, but tough baby face that the girls could actually come and enjoy as well as the guys could.
But Fritz wasn't necessarily like that.
Oh, no. Fritz was just a big, ugly, mean, you know, rough type. And that was really more common back then. Your faces, you know, were just
Killer
tough.
Kowalski.
Yeah, tough guys. I mean, you know,
you look at, you know, Dusty Rhodes. I mean, it was a different time. Like, those guys sold. Like, those guys, people love them. And, you know, nowadays, we don't have that much. I mean, honestly, I think you could maybe put Kevin Owens in that block, but maybe not as much, you know, just because he's a bigger guy, I think.
Well, you could put Joe in that.
Well, Joe, yes. Yeah. Yeah, Joe would be.
It's funny because I just happened to have pictures of, and my friend Becca, she was over here, and she goes, well, who's that big, mean, ugly cuss?
Joe.
that's Samoa Joe.
It's true. Yeah, yeah, Joe could be in there, too.
Yeah, definitely.
But back then, it was just, personality. I mean, wrestlers, you know, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing with wrestling is personality, and the Von Erichs, certainly I don't have much experience with them, but the things that I've seen, I mean, just looking at pictures, they're charismatic, you know? I mean, you don't even have to see them move
exactly.
or wrestle or anything.
They had incredible bodies. They were very good looking. They had the long hair when you hear crowds yell today, and I give a perfect example, women are still there and they're still rooting for Roman Reigns, but you know, there's that whole back and forth thing, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, there wasn't a back and forth with the Von Erichs, except for maybe a few sprinkled like me when I was putting up the rebel flag rooting for the Freebirds. but the girls were screaming like it was a rock concert.
Yeah.
They adored the Von Erich brothers.
Yeah, and the whole girls screaming thing is fascinating to me, because I can imagine it, because this isn't necessarily wrestling related, but my mom is a huge Elvis fan, and she would talk about, I remember growing up, her telling me Elvis Presley stories. Not that I don't think she ever saw him live, but she would go to the movie theater. And she would tell me stories about how you couldn't even hear the movie because girls were screaming the whole time. So that's the environment. You know, that's how much times have changed. You couldn't ever imagine that now. Ever.
No.
I mean, you know, and even in wrestling you can't. I mean, it's certainly there a little bit, but not to the extent, you know. Especially for Reigns, you know, the booer. I can see where Reigns would be in that kind of...
Reigns is so much that. Definitely.
And Randy Orton is, too.
Oh, yes, he is.
But yes, you just don't get that. I don't think the WWE doesn't play that up, either.
No, they don't.
And I think that is a downfall of them.
It is. Well, I don't want to be too in the grid, but there was a term that Jeff Jarrett and Jerry Lawler used when they went to Mid-South. You know, Mid-South was always pretty good, and Junkyard Dog was way over, but they were very much a one note. I mean, that would definitely was still all big tough guys, former football players, and you know, just rough, tough, mean looking, ugly guys, you know. When Bill Dundee came down and decided to become the booker, and they had that big famous talent exchange with Memphis where they brought in the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express and all this and the other. Well, one of the reasons they did that was because when they were there and they were hanging out and they watched the matches, and then they went to go eat, and Jarrett says, "Well, where are the BJs?" And he didn't use the initials, yeah. You know. And he's like, and Cowboy Bill Watts is like, "You could take care of that on your own time." And he goes, "No. I mean, where are the girl fans?" "Oh, well, we don't get a lot of girlfriends." "Well, you're cutting your nose off despite your face. There's a lot of women out there that got a lot of money." And that's what the Rock and Roll Express brought in.
Yeah. The grannies. I miss the grannies.
And the grannies, yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
sure.
The grannies. Part of it.
Absolutely. And see, Tommy Rich and the Rock and Roll Express and particularly the Von Erichs were perfect because they were that balance to where the girls all went crazy for them. And by the way, I urge you and anybody else, just pull them up on YouTube and just watch the entrance, if nothing else. I urge you to watch the match because it's going to be good because they could work great. But just watch the entrance when they're coming out to either, you know, Stranglehold by Ted Nugent or to ZZ Top or whatever, just watch it. The girls are losing their minds.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to watch. And the reason is that, you know, they were beautiful guys. They were Adonises. And so the girls certainly loved their hair and they loved their bodies and they loved their looks, but they were also good, wholesome boys, and they were, you know, good to their mama, and they were fighting the good fight, and they were heroes. And also, they were tough. I mean, obviously, were strong and tough, and so on and so forth. So guys could like them and work with their girlfriends for them, you know. So they were really the apex of a true wrestling heroes. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I agree. It was just such a different time back then. I really wish I was an adult back then and could enjoy it. You know, but I do enjoy going on YouTube. A lot of this stuff you can find on YouTube and on the WWE Network. They've added a ton of stuff. They've added some world-class stuff as well, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
So you can find a lot of that stuff, and I'm sure you can find a lot of Fritz matches on there, or at least him in front of the camera.
Well, they definitely have. I mean, just look up if you want to see Fritz in action, look up and it was well past his prime, but still, you could see just how huge he still was over. But they do have the David Von Erich Memorial on there, the first one, and I encourage everybody to watch that whole show. It was a fantastic show. All the matches are great on that. But Fritz had to be talked into doing that. Yeah. Michael Hayes talked him into it. You know, because, you know, Fritz was like saying, "Well, I'm old and I can't work anymore," and all that. And Michael Hayes says, "You don't have to work. You don't have to do anything. It says, we'll beat up on your sons for a bit, and they'll hot tag you, and you come in that ring, and you slap the law on Buddy Roberts and Terry Gordy, and the place is going to lose their minds." And they exactly did. So.
Yeah. Wow. Well, John, I really appreciate you giving us all a little history lesson with Von Erich.
My pleasure.
I know you like I know they are one of your
like
favorite
talking.
Subjects. Well, you like talking, and they are one of your favorite subjects, so that's why I chose them to kind of be first. And if you're really good after the Von Erichs, we might go Freebirds. But with that, you know, if you guys want to hear more Von Erich stuff, and then in the next couple weeks, we will do another one. I don't know how long the series will be if we go through each son or we haven't really talked about that. So we'll figure that out, and we will do more of these because I think it's very cool. And we will throw some of them on the Patreon account, and we will do some over here on the main show as well. I really think the profile, you know, the superstar profile kind of podcasts are cool. And it just gives people either, you know, a time to be nostalgic about the things that they already know or learn something like myself. So I appreciate you being from Texas and being knowledgeable about them enough to carry a podcast.
And I'll give you a bit of a tease for the when we do get to the latter years and the boys' advent as the stars. There's a reason that Ric Flair, one of his very favorite territories, if not his favorite territory, to go outside of his home territory, Mid-Atlantic, was Dallas, Texas.
Well, can't wait to find that out. And I know I've talked about this a lot this episode, but one last plug. Go to www.patreon.com/theprowrestlingroundtable and give us some support. $5, you'll get the podcast and some articles. At the very least, if you don't want to support in that way or can't, we totally understand. Just go to iTunes and throw us up a review. You know, that also helps immensely. So if you're a fan of the show, either one of those two ways work, or just continue listening. We're fine with that. And it sounds like the show is ending, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to tag another episode, actually, from our Patreon account. I'm going to put that on here. So it's a it's actually not a discussion. It's just me talking for a half hour. But it's me reviewing.
He puts us through the Richard Ringer.
That's the new thing going around. It's a review of a Stone Cold Steve Austin figure that I recently purchased. And I talk about it in length. I review it. I tell you the good and the bad about it. So I'm going to tag that on as a little surprise.
Hey, do you tell us the bottom line?
I should have. I think I'd tell you to buy it, so that I guess that's the bottom line. But and I also have a Rock figure in the same series, so I'll probably be doing another one in the next few weeks. So tune in. A lot of cool stuff going on over there, and we just appreciate y'all, you know, supporting the show we've got going on here. So, any last words, John, before we go to the bonus episode?
Fire country forever.
All right, buddy. Have a good night, and thank you very much, sir.
Free birds forever.
Now, you have to make a choice.
Every good hero deserves a great villain. What would Batman be without the Joker?
That's true. Welcome, everybody, to episode 4. Of the Patreon exclusive podcast for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable podcast. So we're going to do things a little different today. I am all by myself. Yep, this is Richard. And so it's been a little bit since we've done a Patreon cast. So I wanted to get one out there. And I wanted to talk about action figures. Wrestling action figures, just a little bit. I'm going to do a little bit of a review. Wrestling figures is something I've wanted to have as a topic of the show, but for various reasons we have not yet. But trust me, guys, it is on the way. We will. That is my goal this year, is to do one. But because I love action figures, I mean, I love the wrestling figures. I did as a kid. I did in the mid-90s when Jack Specific came out. I was a crazy collector about those. But nowadays, I'm not so big on them. They're great. I mean, they're even better than they ever were. You've got the Elite line for WWE, which is articulated crazily. And, you know, the prices are $20 in the store, which is insane to me. I mean, I thought when action figures went up to $10, I was like, woo, that's expensive. But nowadays, $20 is pretty accurate for a well-articulated and well-designed figure in the Walmart, Target-type stores.
So I've wanted to get into a line, but they're so hard to keep track of, and they come out so often, and sometimes I just don't like all of them, and I don't know. There's just various reasons. I pick up some here and there that I like. They do the Mutants line, which is pretty cool. I've got the Finn Balor out of that one, and I really like that one. They've done a Zombie line, which I don't have any of that, although the new Stone Cold Steve Austin in the Zombie line, if you haven't seen that, go check it out. It looks very cool and will probably be very hard to find. So in looking up things and looking at figures and what to collect, I came across a series. It's made by Bandai, and they're not easily found in the stores, although people have been posting pictures that they are at Toys R Us. I don't go to Toys R Us that often because I have to venture to the big city for that one. So I don't get there as often as I'd like to, but they're showing up there. The company is Bandai, and the line is SH Figure Arts. And they have a crazy line, kind of like Funko, where they do various things, and, you know, just all over the map. Like, there's no rhyme or reason, just whatever's popular, they do it. And so, yeah, there you go. So SH Figure Arts is now doing a WWE Superstar series. Now, it came out last year, they started. They've released two figures. As of right now, maybe three, but I'll get into that later. But two figures are readily available right now on Amazon or anywhere you go. If you like the Attitude series, I think this is the series for you, or the Attitude Era, I should say. This is the series for you. The first two figures are Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. So those are, you know, right there, bam, heavy hitters. And I'd like to, I stumbled on these, and I was like, I don't know. I wasn't quite sure of the height. Even when I ordered them, I didn't really look at the height of these. Because if you look at pictures of them, they just look incredible. And they look big. Because sometimes it's hard to get good detail into a small figure, I feel. So I thought they were bigger. I mean, I even thought they were like 10 to 12 inches. And so I didn't really, I mean, I did some research on them as far as reviews and stuff and all that, but I didn't look at dimensions because I'm not too crazy about that. Like, I'm not, you know, some people are like, oh, they've got to be this size and they've got to be, you know, relative to the other people. And I'm like, I'm not too crazy on that. I actually, because of some of my OCDs, I like all the figures to kind of be the same height. You know, it may not be realistic, but it is nice if you have a big guy to be bigger than a Rey Mysterio or even Stone Cold, you know, if you have the Big Show in there. So I don't know. I guess we could get a debate on that. But I have purchased the Stone Cold, and I am going to do the very first The Pro Wrestling Roundtable figure review. That's right, I can't show you the figure. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the package in my hands, get your minds out of the gutter, and open it up and tell you what I think. What is my review of this figure? And will it be enough to keep me going? I mean, the figures are not cheap. So we're going to get all into that. And I think, as a first time for the Patreon podcast, I'm going to take a little break. I'll put something here. We'll see what happens. I'll put a little something right here. But I will be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, E.L. James's 50 Shades Darker, as read by Andre the Giant and Mae Young.
There's a bear on there! On a bear! On a bear, yes! What do I have to do to make it rid of that? To make it so that I want you anyway, that I can get you? That I love you? Don't leave me.
Oh, for crying out loud, no! I'm not gonna go.
Really?
What can I do to make you understand I will not run? What can I say?
There is one thing you can do.
What?
Marry me.
This has been 50 Shades Darker with Andre the Giant and Mae Young. Welcome back to another edition of 50 Shades Darker with Andre the Giant and Mae Young. Actual lines from the actual book.
So you're my...
Whoop! Messed up.
So you're my boss now!
Technically, I'm your boss's boss's boss.
And technically, it's gross moral turpitude. The fact that I'm blanking my boss's boss's boss.
At the moment, you're arguing with him. There's something about your anesthesia that calls to me on some deep level that I don't understand. It's a silence call. I can't resist you. I don't want to lose you. Don't want to lose. Have a little faith in Andre the Giant. And a little patience, please. Sweet Jesus, you're wearing stockings.
You love strapping me in, don't you?
In any Andre, I do not feel very comfortable going along with this quote, but not super into it.
You're a pervert!
No.
You're my pervert! I don't know whether to worship at your feet or spank the living beep out of you! You're the only person I'd fly 3,000 miles to see! I thought I'd broken you!
Broken? Me? Oh, no, Anna. Just the opposite. You're my lifeline. Oh, stairs are still. I love you. I want to let you to protect you for the rest of my life, my man. Always share my life with me. Let me ask you something first. Do you want a regular vanilla relationship with no kinky poop? With no kinky poop at all? I just want to say, Andre the Giant, I'm not very comfortable with this.
I'm super comfortable with it! Kinky poopery! Kinky poopery!
I can't believe you said that.
What? I can't believe you said that! That's my line, Andre the Giant!
Well, I did. Answer me.
I like your kinky blueberry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been 50 Shades Darker with Andre the Giant and Mae Young.
All right, see, I told you I'd be back. And how funny is Joe Crow? He sent that to me just off of a whim, you know. He sometimes we plan things out and I ask him for stuff or, you know, we write out something. And the skits are one of, you know, me and John especially, it's one of our favorite parts of the show. I love doing them and I love hearing them and I love getting them and editing them. And that is an unedited version that we will probably be appearing on the show in the next few weeks. I just thought it would be fun to show y'all a little skit and what it sounds like before it's edited and stuff. And I love Joe cracking up in the middle of that. It just shows, you know, I mean, he thinks it's as funny as we do because I think it's hilarious, absolutely hilarious. So, as promised, I'm back. And I have a Stone Cold Steve Austin in my hand. Don't worry, it's just a figure. But we're going to talk about the SH Figure Arts Series for WWE. And like I said, I am holding Stone Cold. And I got to tell you guys, it is one of the best figures I've ever seen and held. It is awesome. So these figures are 6 inches tall. So that doesn't seem like very much, but they're perfect for, you know, just a, I mean, if you were going to give them to a kid, they'd be fun to play with. They'd be awesome. They're articulated much better than the Mattel Elite figures. They've got, I don't know how many points of articulation, it doesn't say in the package. Some of the package is in another language, so I don't understand any of that. But there is some English on there, and there's like a sticker over the back of it that has English on it, so it's all good that way. But there's a lot of articulation. You've got, you know, the head moves around. It's got a nice torso where you can bend. You can even bend them side to side a little bit, get some different positions going on there. The wrist moves. And actually, I want to get into the head and hands later, but first, the articulation, you know. I mean, of course the knees move, but they move in a way where they bend further back. And also included on this figure is he's got the double knee braces on, you know. I mean, it's kind of sad that's what we remember as Stone Cold the most a lot of times is the knee braces he wore. He had to wear them. They weren't just for looks. I mean, he just had to. And so they've included the double knee brace, and the knee braces seem to be almost a separate part in a way. I think the top part is molded on, but the bottom is definitely loose. And I'm telling you, when you move the figures, when you move his knees, the knee brace actually works and moves with it. I'm just kind of amazed by that. Like, it's just the attention to detail that's crazy about this figure. And so we've got that going for it. The toes, of course, the ankles move all the way around, and then the toes have articulation. And also his Texas State tattoo is on his ankle, or calf, so that's good. And he also is included with a 316 vest that is a separate piece. It's not molded on, so you can take it off of him. It's got the skull on it. It's got the 316 on one. Those are on one side. On the other side, it says Austin down the side. So you've got that, pretty authentic. And then on the back, it says 100% whoop ass. And it's got a giant skull with a 316. So it's pretty realistic as far as... he had different vests and stuff, but I'm fairly certain this was probably an actual vest that he wore. But it's very cool. And then, of course, he's got the plain black trunks. So the head and the hands I wanted to get into. You've got 4 heads. This thing is shipped with 4 different heads and 3 different sets of hands. So the heads are just beautiful. I mean, I've heard some people say that they don't, that it doesn't look like Stone Cold or anything, but I don't understand where those people are coming from. It's a beautifully sculpted figure. And I mean, all 4 faces look just like Stone Cold. So you've got Stone Cold just with his mouth closed and an angry look, sort of. That's the main one that comes on the figure. And then you've got one of him smiling, but not like a ha-ha, like a happy smile. You know, like his, this you know, mischievous smile. You've got that one. And then you've got a shifty-eyed Stone Cold. So he's basically got the angry face a little bit, but he's looking off to the side. And it's very cool. I mean, it's a very cool look. And then you have one with his mouth open like he's screaming or, let's say, drinking beer. So you've got those things. I love them. I just love them. The open mouth one is probably my least favorite, but they included it for a couple reasons. I mean, I'm sure other people want the open mouth look. Because all the others are closed pretty good. Although the shifty-eyed one has like a, he is showing a little bit of teeth, like he's smiling a little bit. Or not the shifty-eyed one, I'm sorry. The smiling one where he's kind of, it's kind of that, you know, shit-eating grin smile. So you see a little bit of teeth, but not much. But the open mouth is definitely open mouth. And one of the reasons they included that head, I believe, I mean, everybody wants a screaming face if they, you know, because these are definitely for staging, definitely for posing, definitely to interact with each other. I could definitely see if I had another figure with this much articulation, and I've seen pictures online where you can put them in various poses and stare downs and scream, you know, so you could have one open mouth screaming at the other one. So you know, and they just, I think this series is just, you know, to appease everybody as much as they can. So one of the reasons the open mouth is included is because this figure comes with beer. Yes. How can you not have Stone Cold without beer? Now, of course, the cans don't say beer. Nothing about it says beer, but we all know it's beer. The cans are squished like he's holding them, like he's held them and squished them, you know. And there's actually beer coming out of them. So, you know, you could pose him with his hands holding the beers and like he's pouring them into his mouth or all over him, which is usually what happened. And not a whole lot got into his mouth, I figure. You know, that's just the way it usually was. So you've got those. I'm not a big fan of it. I mean, I like that it was included, but I wish a closed can was also included. Just so you could have him like catching one. But, you know, it is what it is. That's what we got. So the cans that have like foam and a yellowish liquid coming out of it to make it certainly look like beer. Also, so I want to get in on the hands now. As I told you, he could look like he's been holding a beer. So he comes with three different hands. The hands that are on him are closed fist. So, you know, that's a classic. It's good for, you know, acting like he's raising his arms on the ring post and doing his classic pose. So that's great. He's also got another set that will actually grab on to the beer. So it's basically, you know, the four fingers move, and so you can move the four fingers to the thumb to kind of, to hold the beer. So that's pretty cool. And finally, you can't have a Stone Cold, which I didn't think they would do this at all. But they definitely did it. So you have a set of hands that the pinky finger and the ring finger, they move down, and then the index finger, it moves separately. So you see what's happening here, right? So he is flipping the bird in this one. You can actually make Stone Cold Steve Austin flip a bird, and that's pretty cool. You know, I mean, that's definitely a Stone Cold thing, and definitely something where it had to be included. Really, you know, they would be amiss if they didn't include it. And also on this hand, I just noticed this actually. There's a peg in the middle of the hand, which is a little weird because it looks like a sixth finger. But it can actually go in the hole of one of the beers. But I think you could use the other finger, the other hands, to do that as well. You don't need to put it in the peg. But, I mean, it's there. That's pretty cool. I mean, no harm, no foul right there. Because if you're doing the middle finger, like if you haven't posed, you can't see the peg. I mean, it's big. But, you know, I mean, it's not noticeable in certain ways. So that's basically everything it comes with. I can't think of anything else it should come with other than maybe a Zamboni, but that's probably not possible. Or a concrete truck with a little Corvette, but that's probably not possible either, not for cheap anyway. So let's talk price on these guys. They're not cheap. They're not the $20 you walk into the Walmart and you pick it up. I think they retail at about $59.99, but usually you can find them cheaper on Amazon. You can find them. I got this Stone Cold, I think, shipped with Amazon Prime for about $40, for right at $40. So, you know, for double the price of the figures that you would find in the store, you get way more articulation, you get way more choices for posability. These aren't really meant to be played with. As I'm moving stuff around, one of his arms fell off, but it snapped right back in, and it seems to be in good place. So it just depends on how you turn it that it might pop off, but I don't see it being a problem. The heads and the hands, they snap on really good. They just pop on, and the other ones pop off. I've done it a few times. I haven't had many problems, so I don't see an issue there. Of course, every figure is different, and you can have, you know, different figures or different things. So what might be on mine might be, you know, might be a little stiff on yours or break off, you know, anymore. A lot of these figures, they're so delicate that they just break off. I know DC Direct, I was going to collect the Batman animated line at one time, but there were so many problems with the figures just falling apart for no reason that I decided not to. So, you know, I think it's just, you know, it is what it is with the times. They have to pump these things out, and they want to make them articulated, and that means some of the points are fragile, so they just... Sometimes a figure will pass that maybe shouldn't have and break off in the package or whatnot, you know. So that's it. That's my first figure podcast review. So I hope you guys liked it, and I hope to do more of these. I have ordered The Rock. He will be in my hands hopefully tomorrow. So I'm pretty excited about that. Maybe next week I'll do another one of these with The Rock. So, not with The Rock, you know, not like him live in my living room or anything, but with The Rock figure in my hand, like I just did with Stone Cold. So, the other, if you're wondering if the line is continuing, it looks like it is. Triple H is or isn't available now, depending on who you look at. Amazon shows it, like you can buy it now, but I thought it was pre-ordered for like mid-May, which as of right now, it's only the 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo, I guess. And so, yeah, Triple H is there, and it's not the new Triple H. It's the old Attitude Era Triple H. And then later this summer, I'm really excited. Two of the figures that are coming out are Undertaker and Kane. And, man, the Kane looks terrific. I mean, I'm really excited about the Kane figure. The Undertaker, I want to see what else he comes with. I didn't see many accessories, but Kane definitely comes with his mask and without his mask, so that's pretty cool. But I hope Undertaker comes with some cool accessories because you could put some really cool stuff in there. I'm not sure if The Rock comes with a belt, but I hope he does because I want a belt with these guys. Why aren't they making belts? So I can't remember what The Rock comes. I mean, Rock comes with the mic, I know, so... But I can't remember if he comes with a belt or not. But we shall see tomorrow. But anyway, and, you know, they release them two at a time. And the Triple H is kind of released on his own. But Vince McMahon is part of this line. And I swear he was being released with Triple H. But something must have happened because I'm seeing pictures of the Vince McMahon. But I'm not seeing... anything else, like how to buy him or when he's coming out or anything like that. So I don't know what happened there. It looked very cool. It was a very cool figure. So, I mean, I'll definitely pick it up. I really hope, I know Stone Cold didn't come with it, but I really hope Vince comes with a pistol that says bang so you can put it in Stone Cold's hand. Oh, man, that'd be great, wouldn't it? There's so many, a bedpan, a good bedpan. Oh, a Nurse Austin. They never made a Nurse Austin figure. That'd be pretty cool, actually. That's kind of genius. I don't know why they never made a Nurse Austin figure. Be great. Do a whole playset with that. Anyway, all right. I've rambled on a little bit long. I didn't know how long this would take or this how long this would be, but we've gone a half hour, so I hope you feel like you've gotten your worth out of this podcast. So thank you for your support, and thank you for the support on Patreon. Thank you for everything you guys do. We love doing the podcast. We will continue doing the podcast, and we hope you will support us in the way of listening to Patreon, the way of contributing, just sharing our posts, getting the word out, just all of those things. Leave reviews on iTunes. We appreciate that. So just there's many ways you can help support us, and we appreciate everything y'all do for us. So until next time. That's all I got. I don't have a catchphrase.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.